Hello and welcome to the Poetry Exchange. I'm Fiona Bennett.
And I'm Michael Schaefer. Lovely to be with you, Fee. We're still basking in the afterglow, aren't we, of the success of the special event, an evening in the company of poems that we had 3 nights ago now. What a night it was.
It was incredible. Yeah, it was incredible. And not least for the feeling of that we were in this sort of virtual room, and yet it sort of felt like it felt as close as I've felt, I think, actually, Michael, to being in an event that was happening in a space with people. It was really wonderful.
Yeah, it was. If you were there, thank you so much for coming and for your support. We really hope you enjoyed it. We've been getting some fantastic messages, some really encouraging messages, and some great feedback from people. So if you did miss it, I think we will be doing more. I think that's fair to say, Fee. It did go well. People did seem to really love it. So, yeah, if there's an appetite for it, then we will absolutely be doing more. If you missed it and you would like to come to the next one, make sure you sign up to the newsletter. We don't bombard you with stuff. What is it, Fee? Once every 3 months or something we send out a newsletter?
Something like that, exactly, like, yeah. That.
So, sign up for that. You can do that at our website, thepoetryexchange.co.uk, and you will make sure not to miss out on the next one. Yeah, but we will be doing more, Fee.
I think so. So, Michael, it's great that we can bring this conversation out as an episode. I feel it's almost an annual kind of anniversary of when we actually had the conversation, in fact.
Yeah.
It is about a year ago, because this was part of a number of conversations that we had hosted with Manchester Central Library and Manchester Poetry Library. It was a sort of collaborative part of International Mother Languages Day, which I know has just happened again with an even more amazing augmented program. Manchester folk, check that out. And we were there, and this conversation happened within those 2 days of kind of being in residence there.
Is this the last lot of conversations that we were able to have face to face in the same room?
I'm pretty sure that it was, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason that that we haven't put it out sooner than this is just because we felt that we ought to space out the Larkins. And at one point, our guest refers to Larkin as the people's poet. And in fact, Larkin, I think I'm right in saying, is the most frequent poet that we've had suggested to us in this under this umbrella of Poems as Friends. And you wouldn't necessarily have anticipated that, I guess, Fee, when you first thought of Poems as Friends. But yeah, we've had a lot of Larkins. So finally we're getting around to putting this one out.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's great.
So you'll be hearing Fiona and Al talking about O Bard by Philip Larkin, the poem that's been a friend to Tom.
So have you brought a poem along? Have you got three
copies.
Okay,
yeah.
Brilliant. That's where we need to start. Told. You look at that. in a nice black folder as well. That's beautiful. You give it a read for us.
Yeah, sure.
Great.
I work all day and get half drunk at night. Waking at 4 to soundless dark, I stare. In time, the curtain edges will grow light. Till then, I see what's really always there. Unresting death, a whole day nearer now. Making all thought impossible, but how and where and when I shall myself die. Arid interrogation. Yet the dread of dying and being dead flashes afresh to hold and horrify. The mind blanks at the glare, not in remorse, the good not done, the love not given, time torn off, unused, nor wretchedly because an only life can take so long to climb, clear of its wrong beginnings and may never, but at the total emptiness forever, the sure extinction that we travel to and shall be lost in, always, not to be here, not to be anywhere, and soon, nothing more terrible, nothing more true. This is a special way of being afraid. No tricks dispel. religion used to try, that vast moth-eaten musical brocade, created to pretend we never die, and specious stuff that says, no rational being can fear a thing it will not feel, not seeing that this is what we fear, no sight, no sound, no touch or taste or smell, nothing to think with, nothing to love or link with, the anesthetic from which none come round. And so it stays just on the edge of vision, a small and focused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to indecision. Most things may never happen, this one will. And realization of it rages out in furnace fear when we are caught without people or drink. Courage is no good, it means not scaring others. Being brave lets no one off the grave. Death is no different winder than withstood. Slowly, light strengthens, and the room takes shape. It stands plain as a wardrobe. What we know, have always known, know that we can't escape, yet can't accept. One side will have to go. Meanwhile, telephones crouch, getting ready to ring. In locked up offices, and all the uncaring, intricate, rented world begins to rouse. The sky is white as clay with no sun. Work has to be done. Postmen, like doctors, go from house to house. Oh, incredible.
Fantastic. So when did you first meet this poem?
It was only a couple of years ago, I think, because I never studied Larkin in school or Hughes, which everyone seems to have done.
Ah.
Yeah, but no, I had a dreadful English teacher, so I came to it quite late.
Right.
I really got into Larkin last year. Me and my dad went to Hull. Yeah, we did the Larkin Trail a little bit and went to, he's got a poem called Thursday Night at the Royal Station Hotel.
Yeah.
And so that's joined on to the Paragon Station in Hull. So the Paragon Station is where the Whitsun Wedding starts, and he started writing it.
Right.
And apparently the hotel burnt down, and the only record that they had was the poem, so they rebuilt it from the images in the poem.
Oh, God, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's important to write these poems. People might need to make buildings out of them. Yeah. And can you remember, when you read this one in particular, what your kind of first response was?
The thing that got me is I don't think anyone's really expressed that sentiment as well before, apart from maybe Hamlet, but that's a different kettle of fish. But yeah, I don't think a poem this short as well, really, to express something so vast, endless. Yeah, I don't think I had read anything that really summarized it as well.
Yeah.
And so honestly.
Yeah, honestly, definitely.
That's a great reference point, the Hamlet, actually. Because I think you're absolutely bang on.
What I like about this poem as well is that it's really set in the real world with all the references to work and the telephones crouching. And it isn't just this poetic spiel that acts like it exists just in the realm of poetry. Like, it is set in the real world where people die and people have to go to work. And it's really honest in that respect as well.
You know, the first line, I walk all day and get half drunk at night, I mean, that sounds like Springsteen or blues, or, you know, it's, and I think Larkin does that. He's got that sort of ability to slip in quite deceptively accessible lines. They're almost like crowd pleasers. And then suddenly you think, oh no, we're in, he's using that ease with language to tackle huge and address huge issues.
Definitely. That's what I really like about Larkin as well, because the poems are easy to get into, and once you're in there, then it's a whole different thing. But I think, I hate the phrase people's poet, but I think in a way he is a little bit.
His word choice is so canny, isn't it? Just dropping a word like extinction into a line, or, you know, that he can both make a kind of dark, witty joke of the anaesthetic from which no one comes round, and then he'll kind of do something physical and imagistic, like realization of it rages out in furnace fear. I mean, that's pretty poetry. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's both that kind of everyday world stuff, and there's also this real relish of the chosen word and sound.
Yeah, sound, definitely. It seems in a way as well that he's kind of making it so, not really musical, but good to read. Like, in a way, it's really sensory because that's the thing that he's trying to combat. They're like in the third stanza, no sight or sound, no touch or taste or smell. That's everything that you miss. So he's trying to fill that, fill the gaps with the poem. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't appreciated that until you said that. Yeah. There's a kind of a relish of the physical experience of the everyday of life, and all that sensoriness is kind of, he's kind of packing it into the poem.
Waking up at four as well, it's such a liminal time, isn't it? It's a strange time. But the world hasn't quite come to life yet.
Yeah, and I think things can always look worse in the middle of the night, you know. It just allows your imagination to roam in a way it can't when you're drinking coffee at breakfast.
Mm.
And there's no distraction of what needs to be done. There's no house to house to go to with your work. No. You're just in that.
And then the postman comes and you forget all about it.
Yeah,
he's really solidified just a brief moment in time, and a brief thought that is just wiped away by the morning. Postmen like doctors go from house to house. It's just an incredible image as well.
What does that do for you? Because it's really extraordinary.
Well, it harks back to an older time as well, because obviously that doesn't happen now. You've got to sit and wait for 4 hours in the walk-in center, you know. But yeah, so it brings like an older sensibility, which was more sociable as well. So it brings that world into it, but it's also like, I don't know, like the plague doctor with his beak kind of thing, like a real harbinger of death.
Right.
It's balancing those two things.
I'm not feeling it's love letters.
No.
That's all right. You know, isn't that amazing that somehow it does that?
Yeah. It's more late rent payments.
Yeah, because of everything that's come before, we know that, I suppose, yeah.
I was reading about this poem, like, last week, just... And apparently one side will have to go is what Oscar Wilde said on his deathbed about the wallpaper. And but that was in a rented room in Paris as well. I think the idea of renting and not having a permanence is really prevalent throughout the poem as well.
Isn't it? There's something about that room straight away. In time, the curtain edges will grow light.
That last stanza is just incredibly well crafted. I feel like, in a way, he is, in a kind of like Wildean satirical way, he is being overly dramatic at times, I think. Like, he's kind of like smirking to himself writing this a little bit, but
yeah. I think when he says a whole day nearer now, it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, there's a bit of a nod and a wink going on.
This took him a good few years to write as well, which I think is interesting, because apparently he was writing it at the time when... So he could have included it in High Windows, but he didn't, and he carried on working on it. And then he published it on December 23rd or something, hoping that it had ruined some Christmas dinners.
God, that's so good.
Yeah.
So, Tom, I've got to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
You're a young man.
Yeah.
And you're bringing us this poem.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience of grappling with death and the truth of that.
It's incomprehensible, really, I think. That's all. I try not to think about it as much as I did when I was 16.
Yeah. Now you're an old man.
The thing that gets me about it is the incomprehensibility of it. The fact that you don't know what it is, so you can't write it. So you have to try and find a way of writing around it, which I guess is what this poem does so well. Putting all the concrete, real-world things around this vast emptiness that we can't understand, but we'll have to at some point. Yeah, I feel like poems like this kind of help you to come to terms with it as well.
I love the way, which he does in lots of his poems as well, where he'll kind of lift up the arguments that people use and then he'll knock them down.
Yeah.
So no rational being can fear a thing it will not feel. Well, that is the absolute thing we all fear, isn't it? Is that's the very thing, you know, that we won't be able to.
He's not looking for any comfort here, is he?
No. And it's brilliant the way he does that, I think. And the tone, his tone is very interesting, isn't it? Because that changes in different places. Sometimes it feels kind of quite brutal and violent and physical, and other times it's quite slightly sarcastic or ironic. And then other times it's tender. You know, all the uncaring, intricate, rented world begins to rouse. I mean, that's just the most amazing phrase.
Yeah, the tone does change for her, doesn't it? It's kind of like the five stages of grief, isn't it? There are some really Larkin-esque points, though. Religion used to try.
He usually makes sure he knocks that one down.
Yeah, definitely.
And this is brilliant as well. That, I mean, I've mentioned it before, the furnace fear, but then it goes on, when we are caught without people or drink. That's good, isn't it?
They're the main two sources of comfort.
Yeah, or distraction.
Yeah, distraction, definitely.
We've got this idea of the poem being a friend to you. What kind of a friend is this poem?
I don't know how to answer that. Maybe just like a guiding hand on the shoulder kind of thing. But you don't really want to turn around and look at it too much.
O Bard, I work all day and get half drunk at night. Waking at 4 to soundless dark, I stare. In time, the curtain edges will grow light. Till then, I see what's really always there. Unresting death, a whole day nearer now. Making all thought impossible, but how and where and when I shall myself die. Arid interrogation. Yet the dread of dying and being dead flashes afresh to hold and horrify. The mind blanks at the glare. Not in remorse, the good not done. The love not given, time torn off, unused, nor wretchedly, because an only life can take so long to climb clear of its wrong beginnings, and may never, but at the total emptiness forever, the sure extinction that we travel to and shall be lost in always. Not to be here, not to be anywhere, and soon. Nothing more terrible, nothing more true. This is a special way of being afraid. No trick dispels. Religion used to try. That vast, moth-eaten musical brocade created to pretend we never die. And specious stuff that says no rational being can fear a thing it will not feel. Not seeing that this is what we fear. No sight, no sound, no touch or taste or smell.
nothing to think with, nothing to love or link with, the anaesthetic from which none come round. And so it stays, just on the edge of vision, a small unfocused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to indecision. Most things may never happen. This one will. And realization of it rages out in furnace fear when we are caught without people or drink. Courage is no good. It means not scaring others. Being brave lets no one off the grave. Death is no different wind at than withstood. Slowly, light strengthens, and the room takes shape. It stands plain as a wardrobe. What we know, have always known that we can't escape, yet can't accept. One side will have to go. Meanwhile, telephones crouch, getting ready to ring in locked-up offices, and all the uncaring, intricate, rented world begins to rouse. The sky is white as clay with no sun. Work has to be done. Postmen, like doctors, go from house to house.
That was Al with the fabulous reading at the end there, and our thanks to Tom for giving us permission to use the conversation, and to Faber for giving us permission to use the poem.
Just lovely listening back to that, actually, Michael, because, you know, it was BC, as they say, before COVID. And, you know, I have gone through quite a bit since that conversation. And yet, you know, it really did stay with me, the experience of meeting Tom and talking into and around and through that poem. I found him to be a really insightful, eloquent and exciting person to meet. It was lovely, and yeah, just had such a great love of the craft of the poem. It was really a pleasure to be in company, and obviously a poem that is about a very tough subject. There's something very brilliant about that when you're with someone who really appreciates the attention and the beauty of the craft, even in the face of the subject being perhaps, we might say, bleak or difficult to handle. So yeah, it was great, really great.
You haven't got the thing that you read me earlier, have you?
Oh,
it just made me think of that thing that you shared from
the lovely comment that somebody made about Friday night, Michael.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have actually. I've got it right here, and it's so eloquent. It's just brilliant the way she expresses this. She says, being a big poetry novice, I think I'd only heard one of the poems that you read before, so thank you for the introduction. It's amazing how a poem can sneak up and pick at an emotional thread, and without explaining anything, everything feels suddenly explained.
That's brilliant, isn't it? I love that it's from somebody who says, claims to be a poetry novice. And then this brilliant insight into what poetry does. And I think this poem does that, actually. I think that's what put me in mind of it, is that, yeah, this poem kind of does that. It's that thing of it explaining something without explaining it.
Yeah, so well expressed by that member of our audience. Michael, there's so much going on at the moment in the kind of lockdown. Nothing going on, everything going on. I can't even think to specifically lift anything up. I know that there's been a phenomenal, I think it's still going on, but Kendall Literature Festival, done an amazing program this year. Manchester Poetry Library, who hosted us and who've had the opening of their building obviously held up, but are now putting together all sorts of interesting things through their website and online. And, you know, lots of other poetry organizations. So, just, you know, encouraging everybody to keep looking out and drawing from the source of poetry to keep us going through, hopefully, these last phases of patience and resilience.
We're getting there, Fee. We're getting there. I think that's about all we've got time for this month. So we'll leave it there, and we'll be back with you soon with more Poems as Friends. Until then, thank you for listening.